it is Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
You're listening to continuing coverage of the Rust Alex Baldwin movie shooting trial.
From the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Now, back to the courtroom.
You may be seated.
Stand in front of the judge and raise your hand.
Do you swear affirm under penalty of law that the testimony you'll give in this case will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
All right. Have a seat. Talk into the microphone. Thank you.
Good morning, sir. State your full name for the record, please.
Good morning. Seth Andrew Kenny.
Mr. Kenny, where to begin? In October of 2021, what kind of business did you run?
I ran a prop and weapons supply house to the film and entertainment industry. Could be anything from theater, and also volunteer work associated with active shooter training.
Okay. Wait, would you move that microphone a little closer
sure.
to you there?
Yep.
If you can. All right. And do you still have that business?
I do.
How did you get into the prop supply business?
I got contacted in about 2009. Had previously been consulting for a firearms business, indoor shooting range, and retail segment, as well as some law enforcement training. So there was a crossover. And from that, I met an individual that was working in the film industry. And at some point, he said he needed some help, and it was just going to be a two-month thing. Turned into 15 years.
Okay. And that individual, what kind of work did that individual do?
He did a similar thing where he set up weapons, sent them out onto shows, and also worked as an armor on set.
Okay. So how long have you owned PDQ Props?
It's been about 12 years, maybe 13.
Okay. And at some point, sir, did you meet a gentleman by the name of Thel Reed?
I did, very briefly. Oh, I was aware of Thel Reed because we were on opposite ends. He was working set on Django Unchained, and I was behind the scenes working with a prop master preparing the weapons that were going to be used by cast. So I was aware of him then. And then very briefly, one day, a prop master brought him into the LA Prop House Arsenal, where I did actually meet him. It wasn't again until about 2018, where we became friends.
Okay. So when the two of you became friends, what did Thel do for a living, and how did it relate to what you did?
Well, primarily he's, more than anything, he's a gun coach, and he does work set as an armor as well. But something that he's unrivaled in is as being a gun coach. As an armor, he does a fantastic job, or he did back in the day. So he would work set, and on the back end, I would prepare the weapons. For the most part, I work set as little as possible.
Okay, when you say work set, what do you mean?
Actually, ending up on a call sheet, being hired by a film production. It could be episodics. It could be any TV show that you might see. Walking Dead, for instance. Or it could just be a feature film, like Django Unchained. And so when you are hired by production, you end up being an employee or an independent consultant for that production.
Okay. So working on set was not your thing?
Definitely not my focus.
Okay. And what, at some point in time, did you and Mr. Reed work on a film together where Mr. Reed was an armorer or a coach and you were the vendor, the supplier?
That was, it was 1883. It wasn't a feature film. It was more of a, you know, one run episodic. And I had been working with Taylor Sheridan's prop master.
And who's Taylor Sheridan?
Taylor Sheridan is a writer, director of the Paramount production, and he's kind of created his own segment of Americana that's very popular.
Are you talking about Yellowstone and 1883?
Yellowstone 1883, Yellowstone 1923, Mary of Kingstown, Sicario, he wrote Sicario, both, I believe, Wind River, amazing movie.
Okay.
That was actually the first time that I had been a provider consultant for Taylor Sheridan, was on Wind River.
Okay. Let's jump back to 1883. Describe for the jury, please, how you and Mr. Reed sort of worked together on that series.
Well, I had to push hard to get him onto the crew and hired. And so we talked about it, and I'm fairly tight with a prop master. You know, again, we've been working together since Wind River. And I convinced him to hire Thale and to keep him on longer than most gun coaches or older persons would be allowed on set. You know, frankly, the Texas heat was just too much for him. So,
and just so that everyone knows, approximately how old is Mr. Reed now?
Exactly, I don't know, but he's got to be pushing 80.
Okay. So, in what capacity was Mr. Reed hired on the set of 1883? Was he a coach or an armorer?
Primarily, he was the gun coach, and he had difficulty with the Texas heat. So, you know, I was constantly making sure that he was in an air conditioned environment, and that's not something that a set on Texas allows for.
Sure. So, describe for the jury the kind of gun coaching that was being done on 1883.
Well, it involved initially, it was pretty casual, and we were using replicas, and it happened to be Taylor Sheridan's private arena.
When you say replicas, are you talking about real guns or fake guns?
These are fake guns.
Okay.
Replicas. Yeah. And so that's where it started. It's kind of a meet and greet and just get some of the basics down. And Thale, you know, he's been doing it for so many decades, 60 plus years as a gun coach and armor. He knows small bite-sized pieces to the actors is best.
Okay.
So
Was there coaching sessions that included real firearms?
There were. Then at some point, it was decided, and I'm not sure who made the decision, that they actually wanted to set up a private range on a portion of Taylor Sheridan's private ranch with an appropriate backstop and a controls. And that is where the cast, it was a bit of a team building as well, learned about the functioning of the firearms, you know, and we were mixed between blanks and live. We had live ammunition in one area and then take people off to the side and shoot blanks. And essentially the safe distance on most blanks is about 20 feet. So we would take them away from the firing line and test and train them there. And primarily, they had gotten it by that point. They had really understood for their characters what they needed to be and do on set.
So you mentioned that during these coaching sessions, some of the cast was shooting with live ammunition. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And do you recall what kind of caliber weapons the cast was using to shoot that live ammunition from?
It was a mix we had available from memory, 12-gauge birdshot, just the basics of that. I don't think we even touched that ammo. The prop master had some guns that were chambered in .357, I believe, some lever actions, and also in .45 Colt or .45 Long Colt. Both are okay, both
All right.
terms.
Can you explain to the jury, well, let me ask you this. Do you know where the live ammunition came from that was used in those coaching sessions?
I do.
Where did it come from?
The .45 Long Colt came from Thale. He had a number of reloads that I asked him to bring because at that time it was very difficult to source live ammunition. It was difficult. So he had what turned out to be 325 reloads of .45 Long Colt.
And when you say reload, what are you talking about?
Well, it's once-used case. So every case of ammunition starts out as new. And at that point...
What do you mean when you say case?
The actual brass case. So if we talk about a round of ammunition, there are four components to that. There's the yellowish-colored brass case, the primer that is pressed into the base of the case. Then we have gunpowder. Some type of, it could be black powder, synthetic black powder, modern smokeless powder, and then you need a projectile. And so those four components make up a single round of ammunition.
Okay. So the live ammunition that was used for the coaching session was provided by Mr. Reed?
Correct.
And if you know, I don't know if you do you know where he got it?
Yes, he said he got it from Joe Swanson.
Okay, and who's Joe Swanson?
Joe Swanson is probably the primary supplier of blanks and dummy rounds to worldwide. If you happen to see something go bang in a puff of smoke in a movie or an episodic, a television show, worldwide, chances are that Joe Swanson made it.
Okay. Now, was all of the .45 Long Colt live ammunition that was used for the training camp on 1883, was it all used up?
No.
So can you tell us approximately how much was left over?
It was... If memory serves me correct, it was about 125 rounds, roughly.
And what happened to that ammunition after you finished training the actors on 1883?
Well, that's a little bit hazy. At one point, I do recall that certain things were offloaded from my Sprinter van because they just weren't needed. That was one of those things. But at some point, it got moved back to Albuquerque, and I've never been able to pinpoint the date.
The live ammunition was moved back to Albuquerque?
Correct.
And specifically, where in Albuquerque was it being housed?
It was in a gray bin marked live ammunition, and it was actually in the bathroom.
Of where?
Of PDQ's location in Albuquerque.
Of your business?
Correct.
Okay. And can you explain to the jury how did you know it was live, and how were you able to keep it separate from dummies and blanks?
Well, it's obviously, it's a concern anytime you've got these things in, let's just say, one structure. And in this instance, always better to keep live ammunition near blanks rather than dummy rounds, because dummy rounds and live ammunition can look exactly the same. So if we were to look, if I were to set aside a single blank and a piece of in a round, single round of live ammunition, it would be obvious which is which just from looking at it. Okay. The same cannot be said for live ammunition. So these are things that should never be next to each other.
Did you keep all of the 45 Long Colt live ammunition in the gray bin?
It was in the gray bin, and it was marked on two sides live ammunition.
Did you have 45 Long Colt live ammunition stored anywhere other than the gray bin at PDQ in Albuquerque?
No.
And do you recall a search warrant being executed at PDQ?
I do.
And when the search warrant was executed, were you present?
I was.
Did you aid the police?
Absolutely.
And did you provide law enforcement all of the 45 Colt live ammunition that you had at PDQ?
Yes, and it wasn't spelled out in the warrant that way. If my memory serves me correct, the warrant specified that any live.
Yeah, and it's okay. I'll make. We'll move on from that. I understand your concerns. So let's not talk about the warrant, okay? Was there another show that you and Mr. Reed both supplied firearms and ammunition to after 1883?
No.
Did you supply firearms or, and when I say ammunition, I apologize, I mean blanks and dummies, to the set of a movie called The Old Way?
Yes, but that was filming concurrently with 1883.
Okay, they were happening at the same time.
Yes.
All right. So the, what did you provide?
Now that I think about it, actually Hannah was wrapping The Old Way, and we were still in pre-production at that point. I don't think we had gone to camera yet.
On 1883?
Yeah. I remember being in Texas at the time when Hannah was wrapping out The Old Way, which is essentially concluding filming. They, you know, no more camera work at all, right? She's packing up her guns. She's packing up her bags.
Okay.
To leave Livingston, Montana, and we were still prepping to go to camera, but working for production on 1883.
Okay. So you indicated that Hannah was involved in the movie The Old Way. Can you explain to the jury in what capacity was she working on that film?
Well, it was her first solo lead as head armor, and Thail got in touch with me and said that...
Hang on. I don't want any hearsay.
Okay.
So she was the lead armor, and that was the first movie she was lead armor on.
Correct.
Okay. Explain to the ladies and gentlemen of the jury what you supplied to the set of The Old Way.
Roughly half the guns, most of them the long arms, which are lever actions, and shotguns and single shot rifles as well. And then there was a mix of about 50-50%, 50% Thail, 50% PDQ supplied the blanks. I supplied 14 rounds of 38-40 dummy rounds. And Thail and Hannah supplied the balance of the dummy rounds.
Okay, so you supplied the only dummies that you supplied to The Old Way were caliber 38-40.
Correct.
Did you supply any 45 Long Colt dummy rounds to the set of The Old Way?
No, I didn't have any.
And you only supplied 14... 38-40 dummies?
It's all I had, yeah.
Okay. And it's your understanding that Mr. Reed and Ms. Gutierrez supplied the remaining dummy rounds to that show?
Yes.
The dummy rounds that Ms. Gutierrez supplied to the set of The Old Way, if you know, do you know where she got them?
She got them from Thale.
All right. Do you source a lot of your ammunition from Mr. Swanson?
100%. Actually, no. Excuse me. 90%.
And do you source from Mr. Swanson?
And again, not ammunition.
Understood.
Dummy rounds and blanks.
Okay. Do you source both dummy rounds and blanks from Mr. Swanson?
Dummy rounds, 100% from Joe Swanson.
Okay. I think we should look at some pictures, if we can get set up. Mr. Bowles, will you have a look at something with me? But I don't want it to be displayed yet. So here's, just so that you know what I'm going to show him. These are already in evidence. So he and I are going to go through them. Sorry, thank you.
I'm good, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Kenney, do you see the photograph on your screen?
I do.
Thank you. Have you ever had a box of dummies from Mr. Swanson with that label?
No, never.
And why would you not have a box with this label if you're sourcing your dummy rounds from Mr. Swanson?
Well, 1883 was the first period show that that I needed 45 long cold dummy rounds for. Prior to that, even though we had done a flashback scene with Tim McGraw and Yellowstone, there was no call for dummy rounds, or the prop master sourced them elsewhere. So I just never needed them. And when I did, I needed them by the thousands, not by boxes of 50. And so what happened is Joe Swanson, he asked me, do you want me to package them up? I said, no, there's no point. Right? It's more work for everybody. So he sent them to me in bulk.
Okay, and so you never had anything like this in your possession?
Never.
And let's talk about the dummy rounds that you provided to the set of Rust. Did you provide 45 long Colt dummy rounds to the set of Rust?
I did. I supplied a single box of 50 on October 12th.
And the... Where did those dummy rounds come from?
They had just come off of the day prior from the prop truck in Texas from 1883.
So when you took the dummy rounds that you supplied to the set of Rust from the prop truck on 1883, walk us through what you did with them.
Yeah, so the Sarah and Hannah had issues with a couple of guns, and so potentially they needed replacements. There was an issue with the reassembly after cleaning. So I pulled some of PDQ's inventory from the 1883 prop truck to make sure that I had something to replace. Unfortunately, I couldn't find a 45 long Colt chambered gun that matched what they had on Rust, but I did find one in chambered in 44-40. So I took that gun, a box of 44-40 dummy rounds, and also spotted some antiqued 45 long Colt dummy rounds in bulk, and put them literally into a double bag of some type of grocery store bag. And they went; those three items went into my Sprinter van, and I drove straight from that set to my PDQ's location in Albuquerque.
And when you got to the PDQ location in Albuquerque, what did you do with the 45 long Colt dummy rounds that you brought from 1883?
It's kind of an odd thing to say, but because there were probably a considerable amount of money in firearms in the van at the time that were headed back to California, I slept in the van with the guns behind closed gates, but that's just what you have to do. So it wasn't until the morning of the 12th that they were brought into the, my place, PDQ's location in Albuquerque.
Okay, and what did you do with them when you brought them inside?
Well, I got rid of the grocery bags straight away, and I built a small brown cardboard box, and they got poured into there. Sarah Zachary was running late, and when she showed up, I was able to reassemble and test the gun.
And let me stop you real quick, just so that we're connecting all the dots. Why was Sarah Zachary coming to PDQ on October 12th?
Well, she needed to find out whether or not I could quickly reassemble the gun without issue and make sure that it was ready to be used on camera for Rust.
And were you able to do that?
I was.
Okay.
But she ended up running probably 3 hours late, and I had nothing else to do. Essentially, I was just headed, waiting to meet with her and drive to California. So while I was sitting there doing nothing, I looked at these overly antiqued eight rounds that had been dipped in a chemical that patinaed not only the lead bullets but also the cases very heavily, too heavily, and they didn't look right. They didn't look right for camera. So I just sat there and decided, well, I'll just see what it looks like after I polish them up with some Quatto steel wool. And that's what I did. What I realized, though, too, is that some of the chemicals seemed to have leaked into the case, and some of the rattles seemed muddy. And
what do you mean when you say some of the rattles seemed muddy?
Well, Joe Swanson, for the most part, stopped using BBs inside the dummy rounds because the sound guys could hear them on camera. So if the gun is being manipulated, he could actually hear the dummy rounds rattling around. And there's a number of instances where I can hear dummy rounds in TV and movies where I can spot it, and I'm like, oh, you can hear the dummy rounds rattling. It's kind of interesting. So he switched to using a single piece of number 2 lead shot, which is an adequate rattle, but it's a little bit muffled. And I suspect what had happened is the chemical had caused some kind of gooey layer, to my best guess. And so I noticed that some of the, they just didn't sound safe to me. They just didn't sound like I wanted, you know, Hannah and Sarah to have to be dealing with something that seems odd. And so I selected, before I sat there and polished each dummy round, I had to make sure, one, it rattled before I spent a minute polishing around. If we're talking about a box of 50 plus writing a label on both ends, I sat there with this box for an hour. So they got rattled before they got polished, and then re-rattled to make sure they, you know, they would rattle without issue, and then individually inserted into the box.
Okay, hang on just a second. Mr. Kinney, I'm going to show you what has previously been entered into evidence as Defendant's Exhibit L43. I'm not going to switch over to the Elmo for this because it requires too many steps and it'll take too long. Do you recognize that?
I do.
What is this a photo of?
It's a photo of the brown cardboard box that I had just taped up to purposely hold those aged dummy rounds, and you can see in the picture what they look like before being polished with Quado steel wool.
Okay. I am going to show you what has been marked as State's Exhibit 174. There's no objection to admitting this into evidence, and I'd like to publish.
All right. State's 174 is admitted. You may publish.
Mr. Kinney, what is this a photo of?
That's the same box. Just it's missing the, I think I saw some spent blank cases in the box as well as the Quado steel wool.
Okay. So when did you take this photograph?
I don't recall.
Is this a photograph of the dummy rounds that you provided to the set of Rust?
That's correct. So it would have to be, the picture was either taken on October 12th or after.
Okay.
Because that box and those dummy rounds didn't exist until that morning of October 12th.
Okay. And after, I think you indicated that you rattled them, polished them, and rattled them again. Is that right?
Correct.
And how did you provide them to the set of Rust? Were they in a bag? Were they in a box?
They were in a white box with white gaffer tape, which is kind of a pattern tape, very strong. And I hand wrote in blue Sharpie ink on both ends of the box what the contents of it were.
All right, I'm going to show you what has been previously entered into evidence as State's Exhibit 48. Do you recognize that?
I do.
What's that?
That is the box of dummy rounds that I supplied to Sarah Zachary on October 12th.
So the dummy rounds that we saw in the box, in the brown box in the previous photo, you took those and you put them into this box.
What we see in the brown box with the aged dummy rounds is the remainder, because again, I didn't just take 50 rounds. I took, I would estimate, up to nearly 100 in total. So we've got, this is a box that contained 50 dummy rounds, aged and polished, and the remainder was left in that brown cardboard box.
When you're talking about the remainder, Are you talking about what's shown in Defendant's Exhibit L-43?
Yes.
And the other photo of the brown box without the steel wool, is that, are those the ones that actually ended up in the box and went to rest?
No, those are still the remainder.
Okay. I'm going to show you what has been entered into evidence as State's Exhibit 48A. Do you recognize that?
I do.
What's that?
It appears to be that same, the foam insert and dummy rounds, the polished antique dummy rounds that I gave to Sarah Zachary on October 12th. Although,
yeah,
one of them appears like it doesn't belong.
You talking about this one?
I believe it to be that round. It doesn't look like it's had any aging, and I think I've seen it in other evidence photos where they're laid on their side and it stands out.
So, and hang on just a second. Let's do this. Let me show you what has been previously entered into evidence as State's Exhibit 166. What's the round you're talking about?
That's it. If we look at the top row, and all the way to the right of the top row, just beneath that, it appears that round is inconsistent.
George, show them how you can circle.
Yes, so it's touch screen.
Oh, yeah?
So you can, yeah. You have to press a little bit.
Okay. I don't have the touch. So that round that I've circled in red does not appear like the others. And I have a tough time thinking that I would provided that round.
Okay. And after you gave the box to Ms. Zachary and it was taken to the set of rust, do you know what was done with it after that?
No. I had, even if she left it in her car, I had no idea what she had done with it.
Okay.
Whether or not they used it or not.
Okay. I'm going to show you what has been previously entered into evidence as State's Exhibit 39. Do you recognize that?
I've seen this photo before, yes.
Do you recognize the dummy rounds that appear to be in the belt? Is it hard to tell from this photo?
It's hard to tell, yeah.
Okay, so let's...
And the shadows in the photos make it difficult as well.
Okay. Let's go ahead and move to State's Exhibit 40. This is previously entered into evidence. Does that photo help?
It does.
So I believe we've heard testimony that these are, from the crime scene specialist, that these are the rounds that were taken out of the belt. Do those look like your rounds?
They do. They're definitely similar. A higher resolution on an iPad would be ideal, but they look very similar. Can I guarantee that those are the PDQ rounds? No. It would be difficult to say. Casually, yes. Court of law, not okay. So much.
Okay. I'm going to show you what has been previously entered into evidence as State's Exhibit 49. Do you see that?
I do.
And do you see that this photograph has an extra round up here?
I do.
Are you familiar with what a Denix round is?
I am.
What's a Denix round?
Well, it's a costume round.
What's the difference between a costume round and a dummy round?
Costume rounds don't rattle. First off, the Denix round that I've found, that I've tested, won't chamber in a gun either. The cast manufacturing seam is out of spec, so even though it says 45 Colt or 45 long Colt on the end of it, you actually can't get it to chamber.
Hang on just a second. When you said the cast manufacturing seam, can you see that in the photo?
I can. Yep. I'm gonna go ahead and underline it.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Have you ever had Denix rounds in your inventory?
No, because it's something that if it doesn't rattle and it's coming from a weapons supplier, a vendor, it sets a dangerous precedent that we can say some dummy rounds don't rattle. And there is definitely debate regarding this point. PDQ, though, and I have never sent out any dummy round that doesn't rattle, whether or not the primer has been struck by a firing pin. So even if we're talking about, well, we can assume that because the firing pin has hit the primer, it must be a dummy round and there's nothing in it, and that is definitely not the case. There are a number of instances where hard primers will not go off with just one hit of a firing pin. And so we don't know that that's a purpose-built dummy round. Unless it rattles, it's not to be trusted.
Okay. And did you provide a Denix round to the set of rest?
No.
And it's your testimony that the Denix rounds actually don't really fit in the revolver. Is that right?
The ones that I've tested do not.
Okay. Because of the seam.
Because of the seam. And it appears overall that they're oversized, very slightly, but it's enough to prevent them from being inserted into a revolver.
Okay. And do you know a gentleman by the name of Billy Ray?
I don't know him personally. We've We did meet briefly. We met briefly. He owns a similar company providing weapons and props as well as dummy rounds and blanks to productions. I believe he's a set designer.
Did you reach out to Billy Ray with regard to supplying dummy rounds to the set of Rust?
I did. Again, PDQ, everything we had slated in inventory was to be used on 1883, so we didn't have any 45 Colt dummy rounds. So I reached out to Billy Ray by text and asked him if he did have any in stock, because they needed more.
And did he have any?
He did not, but what he did have, which appears on camera, and to anyone else, if you were to insert these, what he did have into a leather gun belt from 3 feet away, you wouldn't know what was in that gun belt. And so what he had was very specifically, he got back to me and said, I have 98 44-40 dummy rounds and 42 38-40 dummy rounds.
And were those provided to the set of rest?
He met up with Sarah Zachary, and that's how they ended up, I'm assuming, on set.
And are you the person that connected them so that Ms. Zachary could obtain the dummy rounds?
Yes.
So, to the best of your knowledge, did Billy Ray provide any 45 Long Colt dummy rounds to the set of Rust?
No, I mean, he was very specific. I mean, casually you'd say, well, I've got three boxes that'll work, but he went into greater detail.
Okay, and let me stop you there. And when you were talking about having a 38-40 or a 44-40 dummy round in a gun belt, you said that the viewer wouldn't know what they were looking at.
That's correct.
And is that because they look very, very similar to 45 Long Colt?
Yes.
Okay. So, in terms of dummy rounds, we understand that you provided some, and we've looked at those photos. You've testified that Billy Ray provided some, and you've explained that to us. Was there anyone else who provided 45 Long Colt dummy rounds to the set of Rust?
Yes.
Who's that?
That was Hannah.
And if you know, where did Ms. Gutierrez say that she got the dummy rounds from that she took on to the set of Rust?
It was the same supply that she had gotten from Thale that she used on The Old Way.
And how do you know that?
It was just conversation and text message.
She told you?
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to show you what has been marked as State's Exhibit 175. It's my understanding that there is no objection to this, and I would ask permission to publish.
No objection.
State's 175 is admitted. He may publish.
Sir, have you seen this before?
I have.
And what is this? It's a conversation. Who's participating in the conversation?
Sorry, I've broken my glasses. It's a text conversation between myself and Hannah.
And what's the date of this conversation?
Again, I'm sorry, I don't have my glasses. October, was it 5th?
Do you need some readers? I probably have
no,
five
pairs. No, the new prescription, I broke my glasses, and the new prescription makes me feel nauseous. So let's see if I take a picture of it.
Does that help you?
Oh, yeah, October 5th.
Okay. What are you and Ms. Gutierrez talking about here?
Well, we're talking about the, let's see. Well, what specifically? There's a few dates in there.
Go ahead and just take a moment and review it, and then I'll ask you some questions about it.
Well, I'm asking her about how she was looking on, for leather.
When you say leather, what do you mean?
It would be primarily gun belts, but it could also mean bandoliers as well. I don't think, I don't recall that Rust had call for bandoliers. It was just primarily, gun belts and holsters. Each gun belt holds roughly, can hold up to 18 rounds of dummies.
So to kind of move through this, in this text conversation, does Ms. Gutierrez indicate to you that she can't find any of the dummies?
Yeah, and she mentions, some of them are still in the belt.
So hang on.
Yep.
When she says she can't find any of the dummies, what is your response?
sorry about this. What happened to the dummy? Yeah, what happened to the dummy rounds from Toe, which is an abbreviation of The Old Way.
Okay. And what's her response?
Some of them are still in the belts. Yeah.
And then what do you explain to her something about dummy rounds don't get returned? What are you telling her? And let me know if you need me to. Do you need me to make it bigger?
I might as well just pull it up on my phone. I was just explaining, to her that she needs to, let me know, or as a normal course of business moving forward, now that she's no longer underneath her dad's wing, that if something gets lost or damaged on set, the production needs to pay for it.
You said that's an L&D. What does L&D mean?
Lost or damaged.
Okay.
And in this instance, she's just saying, essentially, yeah, just commonly, the dummy rounds fall out of gun belts for stunts, or even maybe picked up for souvenirs by extras or actors, who knows.
Okay. And Ms. Gutierrez responds, and she actually, I think, confirms what you just said. Isn't that right?
Yes.
She says, you never mentioned this. I definitely lost some off of the belts during the action scenes.
Right, right.
She says maybe like 50 total. I'm not sure. And then she says, so I have to round those up tomorrow and count these?
Yep. That was the conversation.
And then does she say to you, you both just send me out to do these things and don't teach me right? Shame on both of you.
Yes.
Okay. And you respond, "You're a naughty child. I'll let Papa handle this one."
Right.
Were you joking?
Partially.
And what was her response?
So what if I need more? You guys freaking blow.
Okay. So based on State's Exhibit 175, was it your impression that Ms. Gutierrez was bringing dummy rounds that were already loaded into gun belts?
Absolutely. Not only that, but we were counting on it.
What do you mean you were counting on it?
Because everything else from PDQ was slated for 1883. In fact, some of it wasn't even manufactured yet. So there was just no inventory. And the only way that they were going to have dummy rounds on Rust is by reaching out to other suppliers in the business, and they needed them straight away. And Billy Ray happens to be in Albuquerque. So that's a straightaway solution.
Okay, was it your understanding from that conversation with Ms. Gutierrez that the dummy rounds that she was providing to the set of Rust were left over from the old way?
Yes.
I'm going to take you to October 21st, 2021. Do you recall that day?
Yes.
And let me ask you, prior to October 21st of 2021, were you ever physically present on the set of Rust?
No.
When was the first date that you were physically present on the set of Rust?
It was when the Sheriff's Department executed the warrant on the prop truck.
And why did you need to be present for the Sheriff's Department to execute the warrant on the prop truck?
It wasn't that I needed to be, as much as I felt I wanted to be there to facilitate.
And how did you intend to facilitate?
Well, just to be available to answer questions that may have come up.
In addition to providing blank ammunition and some dummy rounds to the set of Rust, did you also provide firearms?
Yes.
Approximately how many firearms did you provide, if you recall?
Approximately 30.
And do you know where the 30 firearms that you provided were being stored?
They were being stored on the prop truck, in the safe.
Okay.
Yeah.
And let me ask you specifically, did you provide to the set of Rust the Pieta 45 that became Mr. Baldwin's prop gun?
I did.
And where did you get that gun from?
Those guns came from Pieta's. Pieta's an Italian manufacturer, and they supplied, or they have a principal, and I think it's a single importer located in California. And I purchased them specifically for the Rust show, directly from their facility in California.
And do you know when you purchased that gun, was it new or was it used?
Baldwin's gun was brand new, as were, I believe it's 11 of the 12 revolvers that were rented to the Rust production were all brand new.
So I'm going to take you back to October 21st. On October 21st, did you find out that there was some sort of an injury that had taken place on set?
I did. I missed a call from Sarah Zachary, and quickly thereafter, she sent me a single word by text in all caps, emergency.
And when you received that text, what did you do?
I called her back within a few minutes.
Okay. And let me ask this. During that conversation, did you tell Sarah Zachary to do anything with any of the dummy rounds or firearms or anything like that on set?
No, absolutely not.
After your conversation with Ms. Zachary, did you call Mr. Reed?
I did. I tried several times to get a hold of him.
And were
by
you
phone.
Were you ultimately able to get a hold of him?
I was. He returned, and I recall texting him as well, and he did finally return my call.
Okay, and I'm not going to ask you what he said during that call. During the filming of Rust, did you occasionally communicate with Ms. Gutierrez?
Yes.
And was there a time that you and Ms. Gutierrez had a disagreement?
The primary disagreement occurred on October 16th.
And what was the subject matter of that disagreement without saying what anyone said?
Subject matter related to an accidental discharge of a blank on the set of Rust.
Okay. After the disagreement that you had with Ms. Gutierrez on October 16th, did you speak to her again before this, between the 16th and the 21st?
No.
And why weren't you speaking to her? Was there anything that she did or said during the October 16th conversation that was upsetting to you?
Well, it was clear that she was emotional. She sent me a text message back that had a number of expletives associated with it, and so, you know, I just felt that she needed some space and maybe an apology was due, and I was just going to give it some time.
An apology was due to who?
Well, I thought to me.
Okay. Understood. Sir, did you provide any live ammunition to the set of Rust?
No.
Did you ever give any live ammunition to Sarah Zachary?
No.
Have you seen photos of the live ammunition that was found on the set of Rust?
I have.
Did you possess any ammunition that looked like that?
No.
At some point in time after the incident on the 21st, did you become aware that you were perhaps being blamed?
I started to sense that there was efforts to redistribute blame or the cause of this accident.
Was there a morning news show that you watched that?
Yeah, I'm an object.
Mr. Kinney, did you see a morning news show?
I have seen one.
I'm talking about a morning news show where Mr. Bowles and Mr. Reed were the guests.
Yes, I do remember that.
And did anything about their statements on that morning news show cause you to believe that you were perhaps being targeted or blamed?
That's difficult to answer. it started to feel as a is. I don't know if that's an appropriate word. It started to feel, knowing Fail and having been friends with him for a few years at that point, I understood who he was and how much he loves his daughter. So I felt like what was about to happen, that was the very beginning. And that was essentially to ultimately try to pin the live ammunition on the set of Rust, that somehow it came, you know, through me.
Okay. And Mr. Kinney, did Ms. Gutierrez, with the assistance of Mr. Bowles, file a lawsuit against you?
They did. It was, give or take a couple of days, January 12th of 2022.
And when the lawsuit was filed against you, at that point in time, did you fully understand that you were being blamed?
At that point, it was quite clear.
Okay. What is the status of that lawsuit now?
Well, the complaint...
Mr. Kinney, was that lawsuit later dismissed?
It was.
I'll pass the witness.
Cross-exam.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Mr. Kinney.
Good morning.
We've met over Zoom, but we've never officially met in person until this morning. Is that correct, sir?
It is.
Okay. Mr. Kinney, I want to walk you through, to start with, the 1883 set. And I think initially, Thel Reed had brought live rounds in a green ammo can. Is that correct?
That's correct. They were, and specifically, they were reloads, yes.
And these were reloads, and some percentage of them were Starline Brass reloads. Is that correct?
Yes. I think I would just guess a good percentage, roughly 50% of the cases were Starline.
Now, I think you described previously that there were three types of bullet characteristics within those reloads. Is that correct, sir?
That is.
And will you tell the jury what type, what three types of reloads there were?
So again, if we consider that a round of ammunition has four components, and commonly people say bullets, in what they were referring to is a total cartridge, right? But the bullet is actually the projectile, that single component which essentially is flying towards whatever target. And Thale had brought 45 Colt reloads that were made up roughly of almost equal thirds, you know. And it was a third, what are called semi-wad cutters. The tip of that projectile is shaped exactly like a crayon. It has the exact shape of a newly unused crayon. Then there was another bullet profile, a truncated cone, which kind of has a spaceship look to it. And then there was the more common and typical found heavy grain bullet, which is, I think, probably what most people would assume is a bullet when they do that. And it just looks like a lump of clay. And it could be, there are slight variations to those shapes, but it could look like a human head, essentially, that was circular on all the way around the sphere.
Okay, kind of like a rounded kind of...
Yeah, and they... And even with a flat point on them, but they seem to be those round-nosed flat point versions. All seem to be roughly the same. I didn't see any variations in those. But honestly, I just don't recall. I just remember that there were three different type profiles, and the issue that we ran into was that They were shooting both lever action rifles and revolvers at the shooting range, and specifically, I grouped the each different bullet profile into separate boxes, and told the guys that were manning the prop master in a live fire armor that they had brought on, and they had an assistant as well, that the semi wad cutters would not chamber in the lever action rifles. So best to use those in the revolvers, and ideally the truncated cone and then the rounded bullets, those could be used in the lever actions. And ultimately, somebody put a semi-wad cutter in one of the lever actions and jammed it up.
Okay, well, in any event, there's three types of bullet characteristics in those reloads that Del Reed gets from Joe Swanson, correct?
That from what I saw, yes.
Okay. Now, you all have this live training offset. It's at a cowboy training camp in Texas in 1883, correct?
Correct. It was anywhere near a set. It was on, again, Taylor Sheridan had set up a private firing range, live fire area, and no filming was done at that point.
Okay, sir, then after that set, you then retained the ammo can and the remainder of the live rounds that Dell had brought, correct?
No. I retained the Thale Reed, yeah, the reloads from Thale, but the ammo can was sent once the first I saw of what was the contents of the ammo can was actually at the firing range on Texas, and at that point we needed to know how many we had and what variety, because when I opened up the box, it was a jumbled, you know, distribution of three different types of bullet profiles. So what I did is previously I'd gotten from Joe Swanson 10 boxes that were flat, brand new. They actually had to be assembled, and I loaded the contents from the green ammo box that Thale had brought into those white boxes. Those white boxes went up to the firing line as well as the empty ammo can, and the ammo can was being used for the spent brass.
Okay, so you did retain some of the reloaded live rounds after 1883 completed?
After the 1883 cowboy training camp, yes.
And those then made their way back to Albuquerque, you've said, to PDQ Props, correct?
Yes.
And you don't know whether those returned, I think you've stated, before October 21st. You said you were hazy on the date, right?
Yes.
But we do know that you came back to Albuquerque from 1883 on or about October 11th. Because you met with Sarah Zachary October 12th, correct?
Correct.
So when you came back, you brought dummy rounds from the set of 1883 to give to Sarah, correct?
Correct.
And those were 45 long Colt dummy rounds?
Correct.
Now, you had a whole group of dummies on 1883. How many do you think there were?
5,000.
Okay. So out of those 5,000, you brought some back from Miss Zachary, and at some point, you can't tell the jury when, those live rounds came back to your place.
I've never been able to identify the exact date.
Well, you also said on direct, they were delivered back, let me get you the words you used, they were offloaded from your Sprinter van, and got moved back to Albuquerque in the bathroom. Is that right?
That's correct.
Now, when you said got moved, isn't that you who moved them back?
Yes.
Okay. So, in reality, you drove them back from 1883, and you can't remember that date at all.
No. I ballpark it, but it's not accurate. I have an idea of within months or two, or even I can't tell you, because I made at least two trips back and forth from Texas to Albuquerque, California, back again. It's I've just not been able to narrow it down.
Did you ever go back and when you were sitting down with Hancock in one of these times and sit down with the calendar and try to look at your trip receipts, look at any kind of credit card, try to figure that out?
Yes, repeatedly. I've probably tried three to five times to see if I can come up with a picture of either the space in, you know, PDQ space in Albuquerque, something that would indicate when I had brought those back. I've just been unable to.
Okay. Now, you said that you brought these back, stored them in the bathroom, and you indicated that that could be a concerning situation if live rounds are stored in the same place as dummies. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's fair.
Okay. And the reason why you said that on direct is that dummies are made to look identical in a lot of respects to live rounds.
Yes.
Okay. Now, you also had within your place blanks, correct, sir?
Correct.
Okay. Why would you store live ammo at PDQ at all?
Well, I've got, you know, self-defense ammunition. You know, it's Albuquerque after all, and that's enough right there. And, you know, I deal with weapons that should not be out on the streets. And I'll do what I have to prevent that from happening. Unfortunately, it's an unfortunate reality. So there is self-defense ammunition, and the remnants of the 1883 cowboy training camp was there, and I, again, don't know the date that I brought them back.
Okay. Now, you keep self-defense ammunition. It's because it's a dangerous town. I think that's what you're saying. And you also keep weapons we've seen in pictures that were out, kind of out in the open. Looked like they were cases. You recall that?
From the evidence photos?
Yes.
Well, you're seeing what I want anybody to see that would break in if, you know, because again, it's Albuquerque. If somebody were break in, what are they going to go after first? That's what it's set up as. You don't see in the evidence photos belt-fed machine guns, any machine guns, or a lot of other things that were there that are no longer there.
Okay, so you had belt-fed machine guns too?
Oh, yeah.
And machine guns at this shop as well?
Yes.
Okay. So you wanted people to see the... and let me just show you Defendant's Exhibit L-14. Yes, sir. Thank you. Mr. Kenny, I'm going to show you Defendant's L-14. And if you could describe, is this a picture inside PDQ Props?
It is.
Okay, sir, can you tell the jury these items, what type of firearms those are?
Well, they look to be long arms, obviously because of the length. But what's inside those gun socks is a mystery. It could be anything from replicas, non-functioning shotguns, could be anything.
So these were there on October 21st. Are you telling the jury you don't know what was inside those socks?
Definitely not. I have hundreds of guns.
Okay. Are these hundreds of guns inside PDQ Props?
Yeah, as well as replica and rubber as well. Then, and replicas are, they look exactly like a gun, but they are not. And if I, that's not, a, is, how do we know that's October 21st, first of all? That shouldn't be.
Not October 21st. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm getting my date. Yeah, thanks for reminding me.
Okay.
This was the month after in November.
This is search warrant photos.
Yes.
Yeah.
I apologize. You're right.
Okay.
Yeah. So that was in November. And Mr. Kenny, what is this on the, are these some rounds on the ground here?
Everything in this room are going to be blanks or dummy rounds.
Okay, but I see them kind of laying in bags on the ground. Is that correct?
Yes.
So Did you have any kind of... Oh, first of all, before I ask you that, you have a lot of boxes stacked up on the shelves here. Do you see that?
Yes, and that shelf holds entirely blanks.
Okay. Did you have any sort of written inventory system for all your boxes? And
occasionally, I would go through and make a list of what I had. It was casual. You know, what do I need? You know, Joe Swanson would say, "Hey, I'm running off a batch of 223 blanks and or 9mm, whatever it was." And if I was on the road, it would be helpful to kind of have an idea about that. But there's no spreadsheet of inventory that I kept.
Okay, and when you say casual, was it written on a piece of paper?
It was. It was 8.5 by 11. I would end up, with 2 or 3 8.5 by 11s, because it's not only, we're not just talking about, 9mm, right? We're talking about 9mm that is going to be what we use in the industry, anything from a solid plug load. And in a solid plug load, you can have 10 variations. And then we have 8th flash, quarter flash, half flash, full flash. So you had to know what your inventory is by memory for the most part. And occasionally, if inventory got too high in one area, I'd say, well, definitely don't. If Joe says, "Hey, do you need any of this?" Respond no, because it just doesn't make sense from a small business standpoint.
And you said inventory through memory. I'm going to show you Defendant's L16. It's just one example. Were you able to remember at any given time each number of each of those types of boxes?
Well, if I'm handling it on a daily basis, yes. Deficiencies mostly.
Well, and for example, when you have to invoice, like the Russ said, do you have any procedure that kind of tells you how you're going to invoice that?
Typically what I'll do is very quickly, usually movie productions, television productions are last minute, and oftentimes the invoicing comes a week or two after the service has been provided. And so oftentimes I'll quickly jot down what it is that's being sent, take a picture of it, and oftentimes things go, if they're shipped, everything goes overnight. So it's a last minute kind of business.
Okay. Your Honor, may I approach? I'll show this.
More raw courtroom audio from the Rust Alex Baldwin movie shooting trial is on the way.
Press subscribe so you don't miss a moment.
From the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
What's up, fools? Main Event Jey Uso here from the WWE. When it's just me between matches, it's day one-ish. And that means it's Chumba time. With hundreds of casino-style games and new titles arriving weekly, there's always something fresh to try at Chumba Casino. The daily boosts make it even more fun. And have me about to get them all during my downtime. Ready for a fun way to chill out and enjoy a few minutes for yourself? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step 1. Go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com.
Got it.
Step 2. Collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa welcome bonus.
Step 3. Play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games. All for free?
Step 4. Unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
What's up, fools? Main Event Jey Uso here from the WWE. When it's just me between matches, it's day one-ish. And that means it's Chumba time. With hundreds of casino-style games and new titles arriving weekly, there's always something fresh to try at Chumba Casino. The daily boosts make it even more fun. And have me about to get them all during my downtime. Ready for a fun way to chill out and enjoy a few minutes for yourself? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better. With new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect, the fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.